these different, how do you call it, all the different Google Docs that have been coming up and circulating so that people could find each other and find themselves. And I will send that because I don't have the actual link for it right now, but I will send that over so that you can put it on your site. And that's a way where people can connect. People can go to Twitter, go to Instagram, go to Facebook. There's so many Facebook pages that have come up.
Of course, we'll link to it at democracynow.org. There have been calls by progressive prosecutors, DAs, and, of course, the whole abolitionist movement around the country to release people in jails at this critical point and detention centers. Can you quickly, we have just 20 seconds, comment on this?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to comment specifically for New York. Governor Cuomo has complete discretion to be able to issue mass clemencies for the prisons. We know that de Blasio, the mayor, has the power to be able to release hundreds and thousands of people from Rikers Island and other jails. And so we really want them to be able to do that. There's lots of pressure and demands that have been issued by local groups.
We're going to leave it there, but I want to thank you both for being with us. Marian Caba, organizer, abolitionist, founder of Project NEA, and Dean Spade, associate professor at Seattle University School of Law, founder of the Sylvia Rivera Law Project, creator of Mutual Aid resource website, BigDoorBrigade.com. I want to just take this moment to thank the remarkable team of family, my co-workers at Democracy Now!, who are mainly working from home. I want to thank Julie Crosby, Miriam Barnard, Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warnoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tamari Alstudio, Dennis Moynihan, Adriana Contreras, Marie Tarasena.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your Friday evening KBOO News, bringing you local, national, and international news from a local perspective. KBOO Community Radio is currently closed to all in-station volunteer and visitor activity for the next 30 days due to the COVID-19 pandemic effective March 13th. And while our airwaves are still live, all in-station classes and meetings are canceled for this month. And just a quick update about meetings. Our Board of Directors meeting will still be taking place on the fourth Wednesday of this month. Check our website, kboo.fm, and look up the Board of Directors page where they have their Zoom link listed there, because that's how meetings happen around KBOO these days, is via Zoom. We are very much still active and still continuing every single day because we know how important this station is to you. Okay, guess what, everyone? It's time for the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Governor Kate Brown has suspended evictions statewide due to the pandemic. States are competing with the federal government in the race to purchase emergency supplies, and at least two U.S. senators have been accused of dumping stocks after receiving inside information. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 20th, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. On Wednesday, Governor Kate Brown ordered Oregon healthcare providers to cease all non-emergency procedures. The order was given to preserve available supplies of masks, gowns, and gloves for doctors and healthcare workers who are treating coronavirus patients. In addition to hospitals and outpatient clinics, the order also covers veterinarians and dentists. In a statement, Brown said, quote, "If we do not take immediate action, the surge in demand in our hospitals for masks, gowns, and gloves will quickly outstrip the limited supplies they have available." Brown issued her order hours after Oregon Health Authority District Director Patrick Allen warned lawmakers that the health crisis will likely last for months and that the state is in danger of running out of protective gear for healthcare workers. Allen said that the pace of testing is increasing, and as more people are tested and hospitalized, the state is likely to run out of supplies soon. Estimates are that protective equipment could begin running out in some areas in as little as 48 hours. Though statewide shelter-in-place rules are not in the works, according to Governor Kate Brown, the city of Portland may be poised to take more strict measures to combat coronavirus. It is reported that the city of Portland has drafted emergency procedures that include directions to shelter in place. This follows California's statewide ordinance to keep people from going outside to spread the virus. Mayor Ted Wheeler conveyed his message through his chief of staff, Sonia Szymanski, saying, quote, "We are planning for multiple contingencies because we need to be. The situation changes hour by hour, and we cannot afford to not be ready if we need to act." City health officials have not yet recommended a shelter-in-place rule, and the mayor's office has stressed that stricter rules are for now just contingency plans. The city has also stressed that an order they are drafting is not a full lockdown and that many activities outside the house are allowed, such as grocery shopping, getting gas, and walking your dog, among others. For now, these rules are not in effect. However, city officials feel that the situation is, quote, urgent. Earlier today, Governor Kate Brown ordered a number of measures she's proposing to help the state get through the corona pandemic. She started by proposing a statewide ban on evictions, a move that follows the actions taken by the city of Portland and Multnomah County earlier this week. Brown also announced that she's asked the federal government to waive the requirement that income limits be verified to qualify for Medicaid, and that the state would not cut anyone off of Medicaid coverage, known as the Oregon Health Plan, during the crisis. The governor said that she had submitted a request to the Federal Emergency Management Agency for 1,095 medical masks, 300,000 cotton test swabs, and 140 ventilators. She also said that the state would suspend enforcement on expired automobile tabs and driver's license and has asked the federal government for a one-year extension for compliance with the Real ID Act. Real ID driver's licenses are set to be required as valid proof of identification at TSA security sites beginning October 1st of this year. The Coalition for a Hunger-Free Oregon has gone into pandemic mode this week to ensure that all Oregonians have access to food. Johnny Shaver with the Oregon Food Bank was one of those who spoke on a statewide conference call yesterday.
We want to make sure that folks know that food is available. That's one of our really important overarching messages, is that our network is strong, stable, and consistent right now, and we expect that to continue. We don't know what food will look like, but we will continue to have the food that we need to get folks fed. So we're feeling really optimistic about that. Some options for finding food right now is we are working constantly to keep Food Finder up to date. So right now it is up to date with all the closures we're getting in from partner agencies, and it'll continue to be updated all the time. And then for partners across the state, you want to talk to your regional food bank and see. I've seen a lot of options pop up for volunteer opportunities and requests for donations. Cash donations are prioritized right now. But you can find links to the statewide network information on our website and links to the Food Finder as well, but it's oregonfoodbank.org/findfood. Some things that have been going on and questions we've been going through are how to practice social distancing during food distributions. So we prototyped this yesterday during a free food market at the East Portland Community Center. We used sidewalk chalk to indicate where folks should stand. We did pretty intense line management to keep folks 6 feet apart. We staggered the sort of check-in process so that everyone was always a table apart. Another thing that we've done is we are figuring out how to adapt food networks to help solve and respond to the gaps that we're seeing. And this is going to look different. It looks like partnering with the school pantries right now to have food available to folks while they're picking up their school meals. And it also right now looks like partnering with the Portland COVID-19 Mutual Aid Network to facilitate home deliveries. I have the fortune of both working for OFB and being one of the organizers for the Mutual Aid Network. So yesterday we were able to get over 80 food boxes out to folks, which was pretty great, all delivered to either their houses or their camps. Some of the bigger things that were kind of, you know, our issues for all of us right now are, excuse me, keeping up with just a rapidly changing landscape. We've been in planning mode pretty nonstop. I know because I'm working with the food bank and with the Mutual Aid Network, there's pretty much not a time when I'm not working. So checking in with each other about self-care has been really important, but just ever-changing landscape, being really agile and nimble and figuring out what that looks like for our large organization. And during all this, getting food out and practicing social distancing ourselves. Like, we have been doing a lot of work at the docks, both 33rd and West, to figure out what social distancing looks like, how folks can pick up food or get food.
More information on where to access food is available at oregonhunger.org/COVID-19. KBOO Radio also posted a list of all the free lunch sites for kids under 18 on our website at kboo.fm/freelunch. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic and rising numbers of cases being seen in Portland, the Oregon Convention Center is going to be turned into a temporary homeless shelter for more than 100 people. This is being planned between Metro, the Convention Center, and county officials. Metro President Lynn Peterson advocated for this repurposing, saying that since no events are being held, it would be a waste not to do something with the opportunity. She said, "You might as well make use of it in the best way possible, especially in light of what's going on right now." Peterson noted that the homeless are in the most vulnerable situation in regards to health care, and allowing them more stability is important. Earlier today, the Oregon Health Authority reported 24 new cases of the coronavirus, the biggest one-day jump since testing began. The virus has now been found in 16 of Oregon's 36 counties, and the number of confirmed cases has risen to 114, with 3 total deaths. To date, over 2,500 people in Oregon have been tested, and according to the health authority, nearly 700 have tested negative so far, with another 400 still waiting for their results. Of those who've tested positive, over 40% are under the age of 55. On Monday, President Trump told governors that they were responsible for getting the necessary medical equipment to treat coronavirus patients in their states. The directive came in a conference call with governors whose resources were already stretched and were hoping for aid from the federal government. Trump told the governors, quote, "Respirators, ventilators, all of the equipment, try getting it yourselves. We will be backing you, but try getting it yourselves." But what Trump didn't tell the governors is that they may end up competing with the federal government for those vital supplies. On Thursday, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker told Trump that on 3 occasions so far, his state lost out to the federal government on purchases of critical medical supplies. Barker's comments came during a live made-for-TV event at the Federal Emergency Management Agency headquarters in Washington. During the broadcast, the Massachusetts governor told Trump, quote, "I've got a feeling that if someone has a chance to sell to you and sell to me, I'm going to lose on every one." Later in the broadcast, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham raised the same concern. Earlier on Thursday, Trump had repeated his opinion that it was the responsibility of the states to take the lead in obtaining the needed supplies to fight the pandemic. Trump is reported to have said that his administration is not a shipping clerk. As the coronavirus pandemic accelerates at a terrifying rate, KBOO's Ray Bodwell had these thoughts about Donald Trump's failure to take appropriate action.
Since early in the year, there has been a torrent of lies and misinformation coming out of the Trump administration and his political and media enablers regarding the coronavirus, now known as COVID-19. In January, he downplayed the situation with these comments.
"I think we have it very well under control. We have very little problem in this country at this moment, 5, and those people are all recuperating successfully."
Over the course of the next 6 weeks, he continued to soft-pedal the risks.
"Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low.
A lot of people think that goes away in April.
In this big, vast land of ours, we have 240 cases. Most of those people are going to be fine.
It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear.
His supporters in the right-wing media drove the same narrative while claiming that efforts in the left-wing media were simply cheap shots at the president in a continuing effort to bring him down. Radio host Rush Limbaugh said this.
Folks, this coronavirus thing, I want to try to put this in perspective for you. It looks like the coronavirus being weaponized as yet another element to bring down Donald Trump.
And the hacks at the conservative propaganda machine known as Fox News applied a thick layer of false information mixed with their defense of Trump.
All the talk about coronavirus being so much more deadly doesn't reflect reality.
At worst case scenario, it could be the flu.
I feel like the more I learn about this, the less there is to worry about.
I was about to say the same thing.
We're going to call out anyone and everyone who's using this virus as a political weapon against the president. The standard flu every single year kills tens of thousands of Americans.
Of course, it's not just Trump and his right-wing media uttering inane nonsense. After being put in charge of the administration's coronavirus team, Vice President Pence made this bold claim.
The risk of contracting the coronavirus to the American public remains low.
And just a few days ago, California Representative Devin Nunes came up with this pearl of wisdom during an interview on Fox News.
But I will just say, one of the things you can do, if you're healthy, you and your family, it's a great time to just go out, go to a local restaurant.
While our supposed leaders were wasting precious time, the pandemic was rapidly ramping up. As of this morning, the tracking website ncov2019.live indicated over 250,000 cases confirmed in 172 countries, with over 10,000 deaths so far worldwide. In the United States, medical experts estimate that 60-70% of Americans will ultimately be infected, and the death toll could range from the tens of thousands to 1.7 million in a worst-case scenario. Moody's Analytics estimates that because of the pandemic and the uncertainty of its duration, 80 million jobs are at risk. That is over 50% of the American workforce. It's true that the Trump administration could not have done anything to prevent the COVID-19 virus from entering the U.S., but swift action and honest communication from the start could have mitigated the situation. His failure to act will likely result in tens of thousands and possibly hundreds of thousands of additional American deaths. He is the commander-in-chief. He is responsible for the welfare of all Americans. But when asked recently if he felt any responsibility for his failure to act decisively, he said this.
Yeah, no, I don't take responsibility at all.
He is the commander-in-chief. He is ultimately responsible, and in my opinion, his failure to act is criminal. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Rising Up with Sonali at 6. Then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather, we can expect clear skies with a low temperature of 38. Tomorrow, we'll see partly cloudy skies with a high of about 62 degrees. On this day in 1965, President Lyndon Baines Johnson notified Alabama Governor George Wallace that he was calling up federal troops to protect a civil rights march from Selma to Montgomery. The quote of the day is from Johnson, who said, quote, "Until justice is blind to color, until education is unaware of race, until opportunity is unconcerned with the color of men's skin, emancipation will be a proclamation, but not a fact." Several Republican senators have been accused of dumping stocks even as their party minimized the threat of coronavirus. North Carolina Senator Richard Burr sold hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stock in mid-February, As chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and a member of the Senate Health Committee, he was regularly briefed on the threats of the virus. Burr and his wife sold 33 different stocks on February 13th. At about the same time, he wrote a commentary for Fox News stating that the U.S. was, quote, better prepared than ever before to deal with the virus. 2 weeks later, the senator told a nonpartisan group called the Tar Heel Club that the virus could soon cause major disruption in the U.S. According to a recording obtained by NPR, Burr said, quote, it is much more aggressive in its transmission than anything we have seen in recent history. Burr has come under attack from both the left and the right. Zach Hudson of the American Bridge Advocacy Group said Burr's actions, quote, represent a gross violation of the public trust, and he must be held accountable. Fox News host Tucker Carlson also called for Burr's resignation and said he should face prosecution for insider trading. The actions of Georgia Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler have also been called into question. Loeffler is married to Jerry Sprecher, the chairman of the New York Stock Exchange. The couple sold millions of dollars worth of stocks starting on January 24th, the same day that she tweeted about attending a Senate briefing on the coronavirus. In 2012, Congress passed the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act, which was intended to prevent lawmakers from using privileged information to profit. Burr, who I mentioned earlier, was one of the senators who voted against the act. A citizen of the Cherokee Nation is the first Oklahoman to die because of the coronavirus. With that story and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Tulsa County resident has died after testing positive for COVID-19, the first person to pass away due to complications from COVID-19 in Oklahoma. Metro Pentecostal Church, in a message to its members, said the death was 55-year-old Reverend Merrill Dry, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Dry was said to be in good health and fighting a cold when he was diagnosed Tuesday and passed away Wednesday. His funeral is pending, and the church is taking precautions. On the Navajo Nation, tribal leaders and health officials announced Thursday night 14 positive cases of COVID-19 stemming from a community in Arizona. Leaders say they're waiting on more details on the cases and are asking the public to be patient as they work on addressing the situation. On Thursday, a public health emergency order required the closure and shelter in place for the community of Chilchimbito. Care packages will be available in the community for those in need, especially elderly and high-risk residents. President Jonathan Nez asks residents to stay home to slow the spread of COVID-19 and says the order may be applied to the entire Navajo Nation if reports become widespread. The Navajo Nation is located in the Four Corners region and is the largest reservation in the United States. Meanwhile, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in South Dakota has taken a number of measures to prepare for COVID-19. An emergency order bans travel, restricts visitors from off the reservation, closes schools, and halts non-essential services. The tribe has asked the Bureau of Indian Education to use empty dorms and buildings as emergency medical areas and is requesting assistance from the USDA for food distribution. Chairman Harold Frazier says red tape at the federal level is slowing plans.
I think the biggest challenge is communication between the federal agencies and the tribe, particularly with BIA and IHS. But I will say locally with our local service unit, they've been awesome. But it just seems like they have to wait for decisions to be approved up from Rockville, and I think we're at a situation where they gotta allow the local service units to make decisions in a timely manner.
Frazier says another challenge is getting medical supplies needed, such as masks, sanitizers, and proper equipment. He says the state has been pretty responsive working with the tribe to get tests. Frazier says they've been providing information and updates to the 22 tribal communities on the reservation.
One of the things I've learned is, you know, as Indian people, at the end of the day, all we have is ourselves. So it's important that we work together, stay together, and one of the things that we're always told is to pray. So I feel that if we keep calm, work hard, just stay together, help each other, and keep praying, I think we could get through this.
Frazier says the tribe is doing all they can to prepare for COVID-19 and is confident in the medical plan. Two Native American U.S. representatives are on self-quarantine after having contact with a member of Congress who recently tested positive for COVID-19. Tom Cole and Sharice Davids have released statements pointing to the decisions to self-quarantine out of an abundance of caution. Both members of Congress say they're feeling well and have not experienced any symptoms related to COVID-19. New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham says all casinos in the state have closed in response to COVID-19. She says the sovereign tribal nations have joined the state in an effort to slow its spread. 14 tribes have temporarily halted their gaming operations. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
And now on Climate Connections, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz discusses the phenomenon of Jetson's architecture in Chicago.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Chicago's Ravenswood neighborhood, you may notice a house with V-shaped roofs and a horseshoe layout.
It's described as Jetson's architecture, so it's really kind of zippy and very expressive of its environmental function.
That's Doug Farr of Farr Associates, the architecture firm that designed the home a little over a decade ago. He says the client, Michael Yanell, wanted to build an energy-efficient luxury home.
He's done very well in life and has ample resources and wanted to send a message to other people at his strata, people of means, to say, don't build a mega mansion, dial it down, build a right-sized house, but make it a net zero model.
In other words, design it to produce as much energy as it consumes. The house is built to maximize sun exposure. In summer, heat is stored in the soil below the home and used to warm the house in winter. And the V-shaped roofs collect rainwater and hide solar panels. When first built, the home was touted as the greenest in America. Farr says it shows that by investing in green building, wealthy people can help pave the way for others.
When you do, you'll make it easier for everyone else that comes later because it will be that much easier and that much lower in cost.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
An unexpected yet not surprising side effect of the coronavirus pandemic is a drop in pollution and a strong surge of wildlife. This can be seen in the canals of Venice, where the waters have been clear for the first time in years. Plant life and shoals of fish can also be seen lining the bottoms of the canal. This is all due to the strict policies enacted in Italy after COVID-19 broke out there. All non-essential travel is banned, and near all motorboats have been moored, save for a few water buses. The clear water has also allowed for swans and cormorants to come and dive for fish, and have even started making nests on the side streets. The death toll in Italy has overtaken that of China. Still, markets are open for customers, and patrons are allowed to buy from the usually crowded tourist markets. Leading up to the quarantine, locals had been protesting the overcrowding due to tourism. They have called for the ban on cruise ships due to how many tourists they bring and the amount of pollution the cruise ships create. Italy's economy, though, relies heavily on tourism. An estimated 20 million people visit Italy each year. Locals say that though they will be feeling the impact of the lost revenue, they wish the canals could stay like this, and that tourists wouldn't come in such large numbers. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 20th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Daniel Conway, Jenka Soderberg, and Ray Bodwell. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Stay tuned for Counterspin, followed by Rising Up with Sonali.
listening to KBOO Community Radio. The time is, oh, look at that. It's 5:29 and 3 seconds right there. Coming up next is Counterspin at 5:30. After that, at 6 o'clock, it's Rising Up with Sonali. And then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. We just want to thank you for tuning in today to KBOO Community Radio on our 8th day of our COVID-19 partial shutdown. What that means is that our station is closed to in-station volunteer and visitor activity, but as you just heard in the KBOO News credits there, we still have our volunteers participating. They are producing remotely, they're writing stories remotely, and props to Althea Billings, our news director, who comes in every day and anchors the news and reads all those stories written by our volunteers. So thank you so much, Althea, for holding it down and supporting your volunteers, because we know how important your local newscast, your KBOO Evening News, is to you, because I'm a big fan of how we do this thing called facts on our newscast. That's just my personal preference right there. That's how I like my news. So big props to our KBOO Evening News team. So thank you so much for producing remotely. We hope to hear you again next Friday for your Friday Evening News. But remember, KBOO Evening News, Monday through Friday, every single day at 5 p.m. And now it's time for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the coronavirus is highlighting existing faults and fissures in U.S. society. Stark